What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
So it's the night of May 2nd, 2023, and here we are podcasting about the sports matchup in California that absolutely every single person on the planet has been dropping things to go watch, which is obviously LeBron versus Steph. We got the Lakers and the Warriors in the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. We're going to talk Cincinnati Reds baseball tonight. They've been playing in Oakland. They've been playing in San Diego. We're actually watching Graham Ashcraft play his trade in the bottom of the second inning right now in San Diego as the Reds are trying to salvage. They're trying to wrap up this West Coast swing on a positive note. They took two out of three in Oakland, losing on Sunday in a game that really looked like they had it in hand. They should have scored in the top of the ninth and didn't. And then we kind of got a storyline boot of a ball at first base by a guy who nobody really wanted to be on the roster at that point in time, which led to them losing the series, which is never a great way to go into San Diego to face this particular lineup, especially now that Fernando Tatis Jr. is back. They got beat pretty thoroughly last night, and it's going to take a win either tonight or tomorrow to come out of this road trip with a 500 record, which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is not the biggest deal in the world, but for a team that seemed like they finally found a little bit of footing and a little bit of momentum, to let that game against Oakland kind of define how they react in this series against San Diego would be a bit of a setback. You know, you want to have them have as much momentum as possible as the young team kind of begins to find its identity. Coming home with at least a 500 road trip as you head back into to host the Chicago White Sox, who have struggled probably worse than anybody in baseball this year, it'd be a good way to kind of finish a good April and get May started on a good note. So that's where we are. That's what we're going to talk about tonight on Walks While Hunt. I'm Wick. I'm your host once again. Joined by the Arkansas Reds fan himself, Mitchell Clark, and as always, BK back in Cincinnati. Guys, what are your thoughts so far on how this road trip has gone? I mean, you know, we watched them sweep the Texas Rangers in the unlikeliest of fashions. And I think at the time, last time we talked about this a couple days ago, we said, wow, you know, like there was some fight, there was some grit, there were comeback wins, there was a walk-off. And it looks like Nick Senzel is he kind of becoming the player that we always kind of hoped he would be? That at least is kind of stuck around for the first part of this West Coast trip. Beak, what are your thoughts on what you saw in Oakland and Nick Senzel primarily, considering we're fresh off him becoming the National League Player of the Week and deservedly so?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, taking two or three out of Oakland is, you know, probably I wouldn't say the best case scenario, but I also wouldn't say it's the worst case scenario at this point. You know, that is definitely a team that you're hoping to do well against, even though, you know, you're on the road. They only had five wins coming into the series, and, you know, now they're, I think, what, 6-23 or something. So I mean, it's definitely the type of team that if you're the Reds, you want to actually take care of business there. And, you know, I think that taking the series is great. I think it'll be a much different story against the Padres. You know, the Padres being, you know, a little over 500, but, you know, definitely not a team that is overachieving at this point, but definitely a team that has invested a lot in what they've, you know, they're really going for it right now. And, you know, it's really interesting given their market size and kind of where they are in relation to the Reds as far as their kind of market goes, because it's, you know, it does kind of seem like, wow, like the Padres are always the team that I look at and it's like, man, I don't know how they're spending $300 million on so many different guys. But
at the same point in time, they had 37,000 fans in their stadium on a Monday night.
Yeah, exactly. And
with the Reds in town, the Reds were in town, and that was the draw last night. So,
and when you relay that to, you know, the Rays being in town when, you know, they were just off of a couple of games off of being undefeated coming into that game, and, you know, beautiful weather here in Cincinnati, it was, you know, almost a ballpark low in attendance, in parts of that series. So, it's, you know, it's definitely a much different, it's a much different scenario, obviously, but, you know, I think that when you really look at it, I think that it's, you know, it's hard to look at the Padres and think, hey, why couldn't the Reds do that? But it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because it's, you know, it's a much different team than Oakland, and, you know, and obviously, as you mentioned, Nick Senzel really has started the road trip off kind of right where he left off, you know, in the Texas series. And I think he's got 8 hits so far in the first 4 games. And so that's, you know, exactly what you want to see. He's now tied for the team lead in home runs with Babe Vossler. And
Yes.
You know, finally, the phenom, who is currently did he report to Louisville, or
I think he did, yes. Okay. So the Reds have 20 home runs as a team right now, and 6 of those come from the DFA'd 10 days ago Jason Vossler, who's now in AAA Louisville, and Nick Senzel, who missed the first 2 weeks of the season. So
keep in mind, Jason Vossler hasn't had a home run since April 4th.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. It's been a month. It's been a month. Yeah. So the homer swatting Cincinnati Redlegs, they are not. What are your thoughts on what you've seen from Nick Senzel since he's been back, and whether or not, I don't know, any of this is actually real? Like, is what we're seeing from him something that we should actually tangibly be excited about and not more than just a flash in the pan right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, like, even the games, you know, if he only has like 1 hit, like, he's getting on base. I mean, I think he's reached base like at least twice a game since this little hot streak has started.
Yeah, the walk rate's up as well, no doubt.
And so, yeah, let's see. He's walked like, I mean, he's got like 7 walks against 11 strikeouts this season. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely being more patient at the plate. He's not swinging at everything. So that was kind of what I was curious to see what would happen going into that road trip. Cause I mean, like we mentioned last week, the Reds typically don't play well on the West Coast, no matter who we're playing. So, you know, obviously the A's are a team you'd like to sweep, but the positives that came out of that season or out of that series, you know, Hunter Green having another really good start, Nick Lodolo having a little bit more of a bounce back start. And then Senzel keeping this hot streak going, even, you know, into last night against a team like the Padres. It's big, you know. So, I mean, this has been going on for Senzel for, you know, the better part of a week now. And, you know, we're starting to see some flashes of what he can do when he's actually healthy.
Yeah, you know, long ago, back in the olden days of the Red Reporter podcast, you know, I dreamt of the opportunity to sit down, have a couple beers, eat a big plate of pork chops and rice, and watch Nick Senzel be the best hitter in the Reds lineup as they play the Padres on the West Coast. It's kind of how it is right now. You know, it's strange to say that purely because, A, we've just not seen him play. He's just been hurt nonstop for 4 years. And when he's been on the field, it's like you could tell he just looked rusty. He didn't look right. He didn't look good. But I feel like he didn't look good because there were so many other mitigating factors as to why. I think this all honestly comes back to the obvious, which is that if he can stay healthy and get the reps in, I think there's still enough talent in there for him to be a legitimate big league player. And, you know, whether or not he ever lives up to being the number 2 overall pick and a guy who is the face of a franchise and a 9-figure contract guy, who knows, whatever. That pressure seems to be off his shoulders right now. That doesn't mean he still doesn't have a whole lot to prove. And I feel like he's out there to prove that his time with the Reds is still evolving, and there's still a lot that he can get out of it and the Reds can get out of it. And, you know, maybe it's funny how these things all work out. And sometimes it just takes certain little tweaks to your routine, to your daily workouts, to what you do to kind of get yourself back into that mentality that you need to be successful day in and day out. And it almost seems like him not knowing where he's going to play every day per se, you know, I say that as if he doesn't know ahead of time, but you get what I'm saying here, is that he could play anywhere every single day. It almost seems like that's kind of like that's coinciding. I don't want to say correlation, causation, all that other stuff, but it's certainly coinciding with him hitting better at the plate when he might play third, he might play second, he might play left, right, or center. He might play all of those in the same game. There's something about that versatility that seems to kind of be helping him unlock his value to the team. And that's really cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder if that there is something there, even if it's just, you know, he's not getting into his head about, you know, trying to carve out a starting spot in center field as much as he's just kind of, you know, playing where he's needed and is just kind of just taking it one day at a time, you know, as cliche as that sounds. You know, it seems like he probably might have the propensity to overthink things. And maybe this just kind of helps ground him a little bit and say, you know, hey, just concentrate on playing third base today. And, you know, you're batting third. Let's see what happens. And, you know, it's really a mentality and approach that's worked out for him. So it's really cool to see.
I think it's also kind of worth pointing out that, you know, it just so happened that him being activated basically coincided with Will Myers kind of hitting the injury list as well. Because if there was one player on the roster who was going to play every day against righties or lefties in this hyper platoon roster they put together, it was probably Will Myers, you know, and also a guy who could play corner outfield and also play first base, DH if he needed to as well. Myers not being there almost basically thrust Senzel into being that guy who, as a right-handed hitter, obviously was going to be in the lineup against lefties, but also was one of the righties who was going to be in the lineup against righties also. And it's like his ability to be a center fielder one day and a third baseman the next day, play against lefties, play against righties, move around, it kind of helps unlock things in the lineup the same way that Myers did. And it's almost, it seems like obviously they're not the same player and they don't play the exact same positions, but their versatilities unlock the rest of the roster to be able to move around and fit those parts. And so in a way, he did actually kind of get thrust back into a much more important void than he otherwise would have had he just been activated and Myers was there and hitting well. So that's just, it's one of those, you know, for all the bad luck scenarios he's had with injuries and everything else over the last couple of years, not to wish any ill will on Myers, who I hope will be back very, very soon, but it seems to have worked very well for Senzel in his favor in that regard, because he's walked back into a scenario where he's going to be dependent upon it every single day, which, you know, the entire offseason, we were like, well, you know, he might be redundant at this point. And it turns out not so much. And he's kind of thriving in that, which is really, really cool to see. Let's take a break real quick, and we will come back with more of this week's Walks Will Hunt. Thanks for taking a break with us. We are back with more Walks Will Hunt, which is fun. Always fun to throw some ads in the middle of a podcast. Still getting used to that entire aspect of all of this, but thanks for working with us on that one. Might have paid 1/147th of a bill with that one. Anyway, moving on from Nick Senzel and the active roster in the Cincinnati Reds. Down in AAA Louisville, the last couple of years in particular, and I say couple, the last decade or so in AAA Louisville has not exactly been the highlight of the Cincinnati Reds farm system. They've had some pretty bad teams down there. And even when they've had some good prospects, they haven't exactly won a lot of games. That's different right now. They've got perhaps the most talent. I'll go ahead and say that they might have the most upside talent of any team in minor league baseball right now. And the addition of Andrew Abbott to that pitching staff finally kind of gives them an ace. And it suddenly looks, you know, on the pecking order of the Cincinnati Reds, like he might be the next guy up, which is not exactly what we thought would be the case at the start of the season, certainly not with Brandon Williamson on the roster and presumably ready for the big leagues. But as Williamson has struggled, Abbott absolutely flew through Double A and has now gotten his call up to Triple A. And again, this afternoon, just struck out basically every single person he could face, which is tremendous on a number of different levels. Arf, what are your thoughts on what you've seen out of Abbott so far this year? And the fact that it's immediately translated at AAA while the back end of the Reds pitching staff has kind of sputtered a little bit. Are we going to see Andrew Abbott sooner than later?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine him keeping this up and just like hanging out down in Louisville for a few more months if, you know, especially with the latter half of the rotation that the Reds have right now. I mean, he struck out another 8 batters in 5 innings today. I think, did he give up a run? I don't think he did. You know, let's see. Sorry, I'm trying to pull up the stats and
doing the same thing as well, which is podcasters I should have done beforehand, but did not do.
Yeah, no runs on 2 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts over 5 innings. And that's after 5 innings, 2 hits, or 6 hits and 2 runs and like 7 strikeouts, you know, in his first outing in AAA. So, you know, I do remember last season when he got called up from Dayton and kind of got lit up in Chattanooga after a couple good starts. So it's obviously something to keep an eye on, especially as – you know, he continues to make his way through AAA and stuff. But considering where the rest of the rotation in Louisville, how they perform, you know, like you said, Brandon Williamson's been getting lit up. Levi Stout hadn't been great. Chase Anderson, you know, 5 starts, 4.3 ERA. So, I mean, right now, you know, he could be if he keeps performing like this.
Yeah, Chase Anderson has been very Chase Anderson-y. Ben Lively has been very Ben Lively. And Brandon Williamson has seemingly taken every step back he possibly could, which is really, really unfortunate. But, you know, I don't think the Reds are necessarily itching to call up another pitcher. I think as we saw the entire offseason, I think this entire season is pretty much a willingness to just kind of let things ride and get to next year. But that said, the way they've compiled this pitching staff, somebody is going to have to fire some innings at some point so you don't run every single pitcher that you want for the long term or not completely into the ground. Abbott sure looks like he's kind of going to be that guy. And that's, you know, that's coming from somebody who watched him at least briefly in Double A this year. And there's a whole lot of questions about the ball in Double A and the new seams and the ability to maneuver the ball and move it around, which, you know, Abbott obviously benefited from. And the early numbers suggest that the ball's not moving as much when he throws it at Triple A or not. That said, the successes he had last year also came without that ball. He's proven that he doesn't need that to be the guy who's dominant. And Arf, as you mentioned, like, I don't know how many more opportunities you have to give him to show what he showed today and what he's shown in every other start this year before you say he's got to be a big leader. Like, you just can't keep somebody down like that much longer. I think he's kind of forcing his hand. B, what do you think about Abbott and his chances of making not just cameos, but kind of an impact on this year's Reds team?
Yeah. I mean, especially if I'm looking at, a AAA pitcher, the thing that I'm looking for is really that strikeouts, right? What kind of stuff does he have? How can he get guys out without, guys getting themselves out really? And, you know, looking at, you know, his first 2 starts in AAA, having 15 strikeouts in his first 2 starts is, really just kind of picking up where he left off in Chattanooga. And, you know, it doesn't really feel like, you know, obviously it's a small sample size, but it doesn't feel like the jump to AAA has been too jarring for him. And, you know, just given what he's looked like at this point, it definitely seems like he could get a shot. You know, I I definitely think that when you look at the other guys that are there in Louisville, you know, Ben Lively is another guy that I think will see some big league time at some point this year. And definitely is really the other guy in Louisville that has started out the season really well. But, you know, I think that the Reds should be very open to this and to, you know, outside of the really the first, you know, the top three guys in Lodolo, Green, Ashcraft, you know, I think that those other two spots are just going to kind of be revolving doors throughout the rest of the season. You know, I don't I don't see Luis Sessa, you know, staking a claim to a spot in the rotation. You know, obviously, you know, we haven't really seen much from Luke Weaver yet, but what we've seen has not been very good at all. You have your Connor Overton, who's hurt now. We really don't have too many guys who are, you know, on the big league roster and are really taking those other two rotation spots and running with them. So, you know, I think that there will be a spot for Abbott at some point this year to get some time at the big league level. And I'm very excited to see kind of what he can do with it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, even when you talk about Green and Ashcraft and Lodolo, if this turns out to be the Reds team that we expect it to be, which is under 500, competing here and there, winning series every now and then that you don't expect them to, by the time you get to early August, that's a team that's probably on pace to maybe win 71, 72 games. That's still a lot of innings you're asking for your top three to continue to pitch into September on a team that's not in it and that I'm guessing is not going to be adding any big significant starting pitcher at the deadline either. Right. Somebody's going to have to pitch innings later in this season. And, you know, when you look up at guys like Chase Anderson specifically and guys like Ben Lively, veteran in arms who have pitched a good number of innings at the big league level as well, you know, we've reached the May 1st point where you see a lot of people opting out of minor league deals who have been established major leaguers elsewhere. We saw, you know, Gary Sanchez basically opt out of his deal with the San Francisco Giants to become a free agent again because he wasn't going to get called up at this point in time. You're not seeing that with any Reds pitchers. And I think that's because they all look up and realize, yeah, there are going to be a lot of opportunities for us to get starts at the big league level a lot down the stretch this year because somebody physically is going to have to be out there pitching. And even in the best case scenario, with all of the best pitchers the Reds have, pitching fine, pitching well, pitching healthily, they're not going past 150 innings this year. There's just no way. And sure, that means there's going to be a lot of starts later in the season. So I'm interested to see Abbott, for one, continue to progress in AAA, but also how much they begin to kind of maybe manage his innings at the AAA level to get him a chance to showcase himself later on in the season when guys like Lodolo and Hunter Green and Ashcraft begin to run into those innings complications for a team that's not necessarily going anywhere, quote unquote, this season. Yeah. But that's kind of what all this is. All this is in the first place is a season where you're just expecting to see what you've got. And that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and I think you bring up a good point in that, you know, I don't think that any of us at this point are really going to expect all three of those guys to even be healthy, you know, between now and August. There's, you know, just given that all of them have had, you know, their ups and downs as far as health has gone and, you know, none of them have pitched over 100 innings in a season, I don't believe, coming into this season. So
barely they cleared 100 last year. The Hunter, I think, had 120 and Lodolo had like 104, something like that. Right. But barely.
So it's, you know, to expect 150 innings out of them, let alone, you know, what the Reds actually need at this point in, you know, they really just kind of need guys that can eat a lot of innings and, you know, put them in a good position to win ball games. You know, there are going to be those spots, and there's going to be, you know, as long as Andrew Abbott can stay healthy and, you know, just kind of continue on the same trajectory that he's on at this point, you know, I think that a call-up is definitely not out of the question, you know, but at least between, you know, now or August, you know, just given the restraints of the current rotation and the current roster.
For sure. Switching gears just slightly, there is a certain first base-ish slugger who's not currently on the Reds' active roster right now, who obviously started the season hurt, and we are waiting to find out more news on him, how he's progressing, and when he's going to make his way up to Cincinnati and be an impact player for the 2023 Cincinnati Reds. Am I talking about Christian Strand?
It's Scott Hatterberg, right?
Is it Scott Hatterberg? Is it Scott Heinemann? But am I talking about Christian Encarnacion Strand? Am I talking about Joey Votto? It's kind of like, you know, off mic before we started this episode, Arf and I were talking about the fact that the Reds have 20 home runs and six of them were Jason Vosler and Nick Senzel. And, you know, on top of all of that, you know, the Reds have some young players and some new players who look like they could be some good parts. But like none of them really look like they project to be like big home run hitters. And the history of the Cincinnati Reds, we all know it's been a hitting franchise. Whenever they've won, it's because of their hitting. Their pitching was good enough. But there's a reason why it took them until 2020 in a shortened season to ever have a Cy Young Award winner and a 130-plus-year-old franchise. And that guy can kiss my ass, by the way, anyway, side note. But point being, it's always been a franchise that has built itself on hitting and hitting a lot of home runs too. And they play in a home ballpark that doesn't, you know, do anything to pitchers. It does everything for hitters. And still, there just doesn't look like anybody on this roster is necessarily going to be a 25 home run hitter this year, much less more than that. So that kind of turns your attention back to that AAA lineup where Encarnacion Strand looks like a guy who you give him 650 plate appearances in his home ballpark's Great American, he's going to pop out home runs 20 times at home. Votto, obviously, I was teasing because he's the other guy that we're waiting to find out about who will be back for the Reds. But in terms of thump that's on the way, what are your thoughts on when or if the Reds will kind of lean towards bringing up Encarnacion Strand, and the subplot of that being, do they bring up a guy who projects to necessarily be their first baseman of the future, quote unquote, if Votto is still on the cusp of maybe coming back? How do you juggle that, Arf? I have no answers to that question. I don't know if you do or not.
I can't believe you're counting out Matt Reynolds at this point. Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like an Abbott situation. You know, the Reds don't have any power in their lineup. And I mean, right now in AAA, he's hit a home run or he's played eight games and hit four bombs already.
Yeah. It's hard not to look at him, right? He's right there.
And like, you know, and if you have guys getting on base and, you know, in the lineup, you still need that thumper who's going to be able to drive them all in with one swing of the bat. And I mean, I think if he's hitting that well, like you call him up, and when Votto comes out, like you figure it out, like you find a place for both of them, whether that's DH and Encarnacion Strand and letting Votto get the majority of the first base reps, you know, in what is presumably his last season. You know, I think you just kind of that part will take care of itself, because, you know, that's a good problem to have someone like Christian Encarnacion Strand hitting the ball like that, and then a future Hall of Famer, you know, coming off the injured list. So yeah, I mean, I think if he keeps this up, like you have no choice. Like if you want to at least give some kind of impression that, like, okay, yeah, we're still trying to win ball games, like you kind of let the other part figure itself out.
I mean, it's definitely a good problem to have. I'm just looking at the numbers and how they've structured this roster and the whole, you know, trying to buy starts at first base for Tyler Stevenson, who still hasn't hit a home run yet this year, and carrying three catchers to a lot for that, but also having Will Myers, who's played more first base than anywhere else over the last couple of years, and then bringing up Encarnacion Strand and then also bringing Votto up. And it's like, you're that's six roster spots where first base is like the primary option for four of those guys, but also having two backup catchers. It just seems like a very disjointed roster if everything is going smoothly. And obviously, Will Myers is on the injured list. Joey Votto's on the injured list. Encarnacion Strand spent a month on the injured list to start this year. So, yeah, as you mentioned, those things will certainly work themselves out. I'm just trying to figure out the timeline and how the progression of this goes in an ideal scenario to get the most out of all these guys for this particular season. And I keep coming back to the fact that, like, I don't know how much we're going to see of Votto this year. And that's a revelation that I had a really hard time kind of like, even just like I choked up a little bit saying that right then. But it kind of seems like in 29 games going on 30th game tonight, with there no indication that he's anywhere close to coming back, have they already moved past him? And that sucks to say, but it just seems like that's like the next thing. Beak, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes to, I think we've talked about this kind of, and I'm still at that point where I think that if he does come back, that's Joey, I think that he could kind of fit into whatever role that the Reds have for him at this point, but it's definitely not going to be in years past. Like it's his roster and it's his, it's his team. I think that's probably a good thing at this point, right? Like it seems like the torch has kind of been passed and you're seeing guys kind of step up in, if that's, Hunter Green and Jonathan India and guys that, are the players that are going to be here for the future as opposed to the current kind of crop of guys. But, it does kind of beg the question of, I don't know what they're looking for out of Christian Encarnacion Strand that precludes him from being part of the major league roster at this point. I think that when you look at what he did in spring training, against, obviously it's kind of a mixed bag, but he definitely saw more major league pitching there than he probably is at AAA right now. But keeping in mind he's, tied for sixth on the Louisville Bats in hits coming into tonight, and he's only played 8 games. Yeah. Really the only guys that are hitting better than him have been there all season. And, I think that we were kind of lamenting the small sample size last time we kind of talked about him, but he's just kept it up and there's no reason to leave that guy at AAA when you really don't have a kind of set in stone first baseman in the lineup right now. You're kind of, it seems like there are a number of guys that they've used at this point, whether that's Spencer Steer or Matt Reynolds, or, I guess Kirk Casale has played there a little bit. Tyler Stevenson, obviously, but they don't have a guy who they can kind of count on, even if it's, on a part-time basis, whether it's, 4 or 5 days a week. They don't have that guy to pencil into the lineup. They're really still trying to kind of fill that spot.
Right. And
it just seems like I can't think of a justification to keep Christian Encarnacion Strand out of that spot at this point, even just to see what you got. Right.
It's one part that they both happen to play first base or project to be first baseman going forward. But it's another part, it sounds cliche to be like the Reds need a classic number 3 hitter who plays first base, who's the big bopper slugger. But like, that's what Votto has always been. And that's what Encarnacion Strand looks like he is going to be. And sure, for as much as you want to, give Tyler Stevenson the chance to emerge and grow, he's 26 going on 27, hasn't homered yet this year. And like, you can't carry 2 catchers and give him first base wait for that to happen.
Right.
And if it's not going to happen,
If you have a first base prospect that you are expecting a lot from, and a guy, if Spencer Steer came up and he was primarily a first baseman, then maybe you can kind of, let's see what we have here and let's keep CES down in Louisville. But, that's not really the case at this point. They really are kind of trying to fill that spot every game with whoever isn't playing elsewhere. And it's like, well, if that's the case, why can't CES come up and at least be part of that conversation, whether or not he's the guy, every day, that's not relevant right now. Like,
admittedly, we're talking about 30 games into the season. Like, the Reds could designate Luke Maley for assignment tomorrow, trade Will Myers when he's healthy in 4 weeks, call up Botto, call up Encarnacion Strand, tell Tyler Stevenson, hey, we bought you the first 3 months of the season. Now you're catching most games, and Kirk Casale's going to spell you. Votto's DHing Encarnacion's first base, like, boom, there you go. It's not a super complicated fix. It's just.
How do we make you the GM? Let's pull that off right now.
I've got baby number two coming between now and probably the next time we record an episode. So I will take any pay bump I can get at this juncture. That would certainly be one until I got fired about 16 months into the job. This certainly seems like a problem that will work itself out, no doubt. It's so funny to see the present fading into the past in Votto, and the future and present molding together in Encarnacion Strand at more or less the same overlapping position, while the Reds lineup desperately needs one of them to kind of be there and be that anchor, be that battleship in the middle of the lineup that we have grown so accustomed to having with Votto. That kind of seems like the next thing that the Reds are trying to uncover. They've got a lot of guys who have decent speed and decent versatility and decent on base skills and decent contact ability. And they got a lot of decent players. They really, really do. They need somebody who can kind of be that anchor. And it's like, we're kind of waiting on whether or not the old guy can come back and show it for a little bit more, or if the new guy is ready to come up and be that guy there also. And that's just a fun, interesting dichotomy to look at when you consider where the Reds are in this section of the rebuild. So who knows? Say it might sort itself out as early as this week. There might be injury news and they might turn to him. It might be something that we're still stuck talking about 3-4 weeks from now. When you've committed to a team that's not going to the playoffs this year, I don't want to say not going anywhere, because they're hopefully going to continue to learn and improve and get experience. Those are the kind of things that you're going to wait on. And we're going to have to wait on them, because the Reds are, I'm sure they're kicking everything around the room right now, trying to sort out all these scenarios we're talking about as well. Good problems to have, but ones they're going to have to start trying to figure out sooner than later. So, maybe this time next week we'll have more news than that. But right now, still waiting for Votto and still seeing who's going to keep knocking the crap out of the ball at AAA. We haven't even talked about Matt McLain. I mean, the guy who probably deserves a promotion more than anybody else. So, good problems to have. Just it's interesting to kind of see which way they're going on that. So, Arf, you got any last thoughts on that?
No, that's what I was going to throw in. When do we see Matt McLain? Because, I mean, he's only killed a ball, and he's been in the lineup for the entire season. And then also, it was incredibly fitting that we were having that conversation as we watched Spencer Steer drop a pretty well-placed pickoff throw to advance a guy to second. Thankfully, it didn't turn into anything, but that was just the chef's kiss right there.
Chef's kiss, for sure. And a guy who deserves the opportunity to have a couple failures at the big league level. I mean, that's, absolutely, once again, what this year is about. But yeah, I don't know how a front office is – I don't know how much you put stock into plays like that, because you look up and realize you've got so many guys worthy of getting that same opportunity to not drop that, but also you can't have too quick of a trigger to make those moves. And it's where the Reds are. It's a good problem to have. I mean, 38 minutes into this and we've barely gotten to Matt McLain, who's a first round draft pick twice. He's a top 100 prospect and he's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's got everything that you would hope for in a guy that the Reds would call up. I mean, if it was any other year in the Reds farm system over the last 10 years, we would literally be breaking things for him to be up right now if he wasn't. And we barely got to him, because that's the depth that the Reds have with young players right now.
But even Matt McLain, it's like, I kind of feel the same way that about him that I kind of do about Encarnacion Strand, in that, it's not like Jose Barrero has taken the shortstop job and is running with it at this point, right? Like, it's not like you wouldn't be able to find the defensive position for Matt McClain if you wanted to get him four or five starts a week at this point at the big league level. You know, red shortstops at this point in the season or coming into tonight are hitting 515 OPS, 196, 250, 265.
Which thank God Jose Barrero can play center field, right?
Right. Like, what? Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, why isn't Matt McClain here?
That's right? You know, BQ. Yeah. You, I think you just walked us into a Red Reporter article right there.
Yeah.
The Reds have 75 shortstops, and none of them have hit at the big league level this year.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at the positions that the Reds have that have an OPS under 700 at this point, shortstop, first base, right field, left field. Catcher. Like, yeah. Which are all positions where the Reds kind of have options that aren't being utilized. It seems absolutely silly that they're not at least putting Matt McClain somewhere, right? Yeah. Like, bring him up. Let's see, like, hey, can he improve that number a little bit? Like, it's worth begging the question, right?
You know, we're watching Kevin Newman in an 0-2 count right now, 0-for-1, the guy who has other than Jackie Bradley Jr., I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. Over the last 4 years, he's been, other than Jackie Bradley Jr., the worst hitter in baseball. And he's still getting plate appearances right now at shortstop and second base. And it's like, I appreciate his professionalism. I'm sure he's a wonderful person.
Good defensive player, but... You know,
he's getting his $2 million this year because he's worked his ass off to get to that point. But if you're a Reds team, like it's like that, that's Matt McClain's spot right now.
But you know? And, I mean, what has Stuart Fairchild done to warrant being the cleanup hitter, de facto cleanup hitter for this team right now?
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like it's not that big of a stretch to find Matt McClain a spot at this point.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem.
To be fair to Fairchild, he's only 2 home runs off the team lead. So,
Well played. Yeah. So, well, the Reds have a lot of first round draft pick quarterbacks sitting on the bench right now that are the backups that we're beginning to get that itch to want to see. They've got a lot of placeholders in place right now. Some of whom are veterans, some of whom are not, but still probably should be looking over their shoulders. You know, guys like. Newman's a veteran. Fairchild's not too much younger, but is not necessarily a veteran per se. But there are guys who are coming for those jobs, and we're getting we knew it was going to happen. We knew it. We saw the stacked farm system and the lack of overlap on big free agent signings at the big league level. We knew there was going to be a competition this year. They're out there competing, man. They are, and it's going to be a very, very short period of time before we start seeing a lot of these guys get called up who are going to be deserving call-ups. And, you know, it is what it is. That's where the Reds are in this particular portion of their rebuild. And while we would love for them to be better than 12-17 right now, they're not 2-27 or 3-22 the way they were in years past. And at least they bought us another month, I think, of watching them go through this slog, because it's a little bit different this time around. It's players who are literally fighting for their baseball lives out there, knowing there's people over their shoulders, trying to prove themselves at the big league level and earn the next chance to do it again next year. And it's interesting to see which players are beginning to kind of thrive in that scenario and which ones aren't. And, to tie a bow on this episode, you know, I think Nick Senzel, he's got to know that. He's got to know how many other infield options and potential center field options the Reds have who are deserving of getting called up. And it looks like he doesn't want to be the one who gets overlapped right now. And more power to him for that, because it looks like some other players, you know, for as much as they have put effort in or not, they're higher on the pecking order of getting taken over by the younger prospects at this point. So, another week of Reds baseball away from this, we will have, I'm sure, more information. We might have Joey Votto back. We might find out he's out for another month. At this point, that seems to be pretty nebulous. Christian Encarnacion Estrella might hit his way into the lineup. Andrew Abbott might pitch his way into the lineup at this point. I will say this. It's been fun watching the Reds compete. The wins that they've put together over the last week or so, they weren't necessarily runaway wins. They had to fight their way back into them. And it's come from kind of scratching and clawing their way through it, which has been kind of cool to watch, and props to them for doing that. So hopefully we'll get more of that as we watch them play this week. They're down 1-0 in the fifth to Michael Wacha. Hopefully they can turn this one around and turn it into a victory as well. We'll talk about that next week on Walks While Hunt. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Wick for Arf and BK. We will catch you next week. Until then, take it easy.